being there for sure. You know, if we want to add, you know, notification of parties, but I don't know even how that's even done, except, you know, notify the city of the subdivision, issues with the subdivision, and then it's just administrative penalty. You know, what, you know, what everyone believes would be, like Dr. Angel said, I mean, 2,000 a case for, you know, 600 and some cases is absurd, but...
Just got to get rid of 20,000 from earlier today.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, 4 jobs earlier. I don't think this is, you know, this is egregious, but that was, you know...
That was completely willful and ignoring, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I can kind of open that up to what you guys' thoughts are on that. And that's really the only thing that's going to be up in the air on this.
If we take this to the next extension, there is a problem. Like you said, a settlement, and the slab moves. What happens? That homeowner goes to Providence?
I would say
Providence
so.
Then needs to take their own action to deal with it. So, in that regard, we do have to worry about disclosure then. If we know that something was done improperly, because that's why we did the notification to the others, so that those owners would know that there was something wrong.
I think that's why we need to notify the city, because what I'm seeing is the thing that was, the permits were pulled with fraudulent documents. The construction might have been perfect. I mean, you know, we don't know that, and that really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think the city needs to know, and if they want to, you know, vacate all the permits, I think they would, you know, they could do that, or they could do whatever they want. But I think as long as the city is notified that, hey, in this subdivision, and we have the list of all the lots that, you know, we found that, you know, that these inspection certificates were fraudulent in every single one of these, I think that's who we need to notify. And the city at that point in time, can do whatever they want.
But I think we should point the finger somewhere at the city to look at a document and say, well, this thing was stamped in 2004. You're asking for approval in 2016. They should look at that and recognize that there's
a... The city of Phoenix would actually allow that. I mean, geotech report's more than a year old, and you got to get a letter from the geotech saying that the dirt's still the same.
I mean, most
municipalities, that's how tight they are about that kind of stuff. And for the city to keep accepting this thing, I think notifying them
that this happened and giving them all, you know, disclosure documents of all this stuff, that's an internal thing with them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, someone's head's probably going to roll down there for allowing all this stuff, which it should.
Yeah.
But, you know, as for just the board itself, I mean, you know, this is...
So you've outlined assurance of discontinuance, cost of investigation, notification to the city of Phoenix with the lots involved, and then some sort of civil penalty. Do you have a number in mind, and do you want to make a motion with those items?
Well, that's why I was asking what you all feel. I mean, I want to make a motion, and they just get kicked back out. That's why I kind of want to have a little discussion. I mean, what do we feel is... I mean,
I'll speak for myself. I think somewhere in the range of 20,000 is appropriate. And I could see more, I could see less. But I don't think our main purpose here is to collect a bunch of fines. Our main purpose is to, you know, make sure we end that practice.
I'm inclined to the 20,000 area.
Is the group of interest, though, the Arizona Special Inspections Group, LLC?
They are coming up later at the meeting today.
They're also in here as well. I mean,
They perform some of these on some of these houses.
Yeah.
They're kind of intertwined, a little bit.
They came in together.
But who, I mean, Providence Development, are they the, they're just the developer, right?
Right, they're the
Providence is the developer. But they were the ones preparing these forms.
They were the ones submitting forms.
Who fraudulently signed them.
In the other case,
signature on it.
Yeah. In the other case, they were actually performing the inspection and signing with somebody who didn't work there anymore.
Yes. So it's a layer upon layer of issues. So, okay, well, I'll make a motion on this one that we provide a consent agreement with the assurance of discontinuance, civil penalty $20,000, cost of investigation, and notification of the City of Phoenix Building Department of the issues and what's transpired.
And over what period of time for the payment?
Oh, 12 months. And if not signed within 30 days, go to formal hearing.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion?
Does Providence have their own engineering group? Or is that what they
hired? I don't believe so, but Mr. Paulson?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody have any other items to discuss? Or Mr. Paulson, anything else you want to add?
No. I was going to say, one of the protections that the homeowners have is, you know, we know that structurally we're not pretty obligated for 9 years.
Go over there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, yeah, that's appreciated. Okay.
I'm just curious, it was identified earlier that a specific employee may have done this.
Right.
Did the board hear that? Are we interested in that person? Or does this satisfy?
No,
I think it's all wrapped in together.
I think it's a company.
Okay.
I mean,
it's a company thing.
You know, yeah.
The company being Providence.
Correct.
Do we have oversight of Providence?
No, but they're a non-registered firm. I mean, that's why it's...
The firm. You're issuing an engineering document.
So they're okay.
Okay. Mr. Parlow?
Mr. Chair, did you put a time limit on the notification of the city?
Is it 30 days?
Mr. Madison?
Sure.
30 days?
30 days. I mean, it's whenever you write the letter to him.
Second accepts the amendment.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
With regards to the signature last year, the multiple times of that, is the board recommending any referral for prosecution with that, or?
Yes, I mean, I think that wouldn't be part of the consent agreement, right. Correct?
Yes, that's...
Is that part of the consent agreement?
No, it's not.
No, it wouldn't be part of the consent.
That would be the employee who was signing the registrant's name on documents last year.
Right. So I think in this, we'll just...
Let's finalize the consent, and then we'll get on the other one. Yep.
Right.
So we have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. So did you guys want to discuss criminal? I don't think it's appropriate to bring the firm into the criminal if we decide to send to...
Well, I think
we refer to the AG and be
the individual. The AG's office, and they can
sort out who to go after.
Who's what. Yeah, so I mean, direct staff to forward this on to the AG's office.
Okay.
For possible investigation.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Paulson, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
We have more people left to speak.
Break would be nice.
You guys want a break or wait to hear everybody speak first? Your call.
I'd prefer a break.
All right. How about we take a short break? Let's, you know.
10 minutes?
Yeah, let's meet at 11:45. 8 minutes.
Eight minutes.
We're back in session. And just for everybody's information, we're going to take on item 7B real quick. It should be a short one. Then we're going to go back to 6E5 and 7A. So
7B?
Yes, 7B real quick.
7B?
Yes, because I believe somebody here is... Someone's present for 7B, and I believe it should be a quick one. So, this is Brian Sands, application for home inspector 172669. Mr. Sands applied to become an inspector. He had some criminal background, but has not had any arrests or any other issues since 2006. Has explained his situation. Has a complete application, so the question before the board is whether to grant certification to Mr. Sams.
I move we grant certification to Mr. Sams.
I'll second.
Okay. Do we have any discussion, or did Mr. Sams, do you want to say anything?
I was just here to answer questions.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you being here and taking care of things for the last 10 years, so please keep it that way. Let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations, Mr. Sams.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Appreciate your time.
Okay, we're going to go back to 6E5.
6E5.
This is... thank you. Case P18023, respondent is Deirdre Rouse, non-registrant, and it's in reference to several TI improvements. September of last year, Board received a complaint alleging respondent applied the seal and signature of Brian Fracasse, if I'm saying that right, without his authorization, on professional documents associated with the Puro Cigar Bar and Chandler Drive Office Project and Ticket Force Projects. We have the details of the investigation, and the staff has not come with a conclusion, and they're asking our direction on how to proceed. So, for those, I mean, with all the cases today, I guess I'll just say in 30 seconds that I think at some point Ms. Rouse was an employee of Mr. Fracasse and was doing work for him and using his seal.
Excuse me, I am here.
Oh, okay. Please, if everybody who's involved in the case, if you, thank you. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Deirdre K. Rouse. I've been working in the architecture profession for 32 years.
Thank you, Mr. Rouse. Or Ms. Rouse?
Ms. Rouse.
I apologize. Okay, and your name, please?
I'm Brian Fracasse, Taylor Fracasse Architecture.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fracasse. So I would start with Mr. Fracasse and then Ms. Rouse could respond, please.
Yeah, my initiation of this claim was strictly because of the unauthorized use, fraudulent use of the seal. And unbeknownst to me, the seal was used and discovered after the fact. She was an employee short term, roughly four and a half months. And the use of the seal, and my knowledge is very, I have a formality. Small firm drawings are to be printed out from a quality control standpoint for my review approval prior to seal. The seal resides on a title block that is an X reference and is frozen, locked, you know, not to be used until my approval authorization. In these instances, that had not been the case. I'd be providing a disservice if I did not initiate this claim.
May I speak?
Absolutely, Ms. Rouse. Unless, Mr. Fracasse, do you have anything else to add?
Not at this time.
Okay, thank you.
I provided documentation to the board of the alleged allegations. His seal is on the drawing. A lot of those are responses to RFIs. A lot of those were responses to him requesting me to do things. One is a building section for the bar. He asked me to do a building section for their rooftop structure. The owner requested the section to be done because it did not have a covered structure. I did the section. He asked me to do details. I said, I'm not a structural engineer. It would have to be sent out. Eric Carter did the structural details. He hand-sketched those. He provided them to us. Jacob Guy drew up the details. I reviewed the details. Brian reviewed the details, and he said, send them off. Okay, there was another example of a handicap ramp. That was for the same bar. The contractor made a field judgment, did some work in the field. We had to provide a detail for his work in order to get a certificate of occupancy. I went out there on June 10th, took pictures, came back, drew up the detail. Also, there was a lady there by the name of Sophia. She did some work on the drawing also, and so did Jacob Guy. We did this work, Brian reviewed it, he added some additional notes, and we sent it off for the certificate of occupancy. And there's other details. One detail came from a contractor referring to a mop sink over an electrical room. Our drawing showed a storage room. The contractor stated that there were multiple changes over the course of the project. I started there on April 17th. These projects were generated in 2015 and 2016. So there were multiple change orders that were not reflected on their drawings. They requested a coordination set. And that refers to a lot of the information that he is accusing me of doing, which half of it or more he authorized. A lot of it was issued through RFI. Column details were issued through RFI. So he was aware of it. He was copied on our documentation.
Thank you, Ms. Rose. Does anyone on the board have
something else real quick here?
Absolutely.
No, there's some truth to the work that she just stated that she was part of. Whether or not I authorized her to use the seal or not, I think she'll not comment on, because you know, you don't need an ADA detail for a certificate of occupancy. Some of these things were part of construction administration. Most of these coordination elements don't require a seal. I don't know why a seal wound up on the RFI. Let me finish, please.
Yeah, one at a time, please.
I'm aware of the board's time and attention. My time is time and money, just as everyone else's. I would not have made this allegation if it wasn't a valid claim. This seal was used fraudulently. I've never used my seal and dated a four-digit year. Nothing has gone out in all the instances that she's talking about, and per my claim, was reviewed and sealed by me. It was sealed by her and sent out as coordination or just information. Most of these projects were already permitted, and a lot of times during CA, these documents did not need to be sealed.
Okay.
Bottom line.
Ms. Rawls?
That is not entirely true. I provided the board responses to the documents he provided me for review. Those seals were provided for ticket force and fraud. The seals are already on the documents. We got a building permit in June. The only thing I did was just change the date on the drawing. The seal was already there.
Okay. I think this is
in retaliation. I am going to say this because it is true. On July 31st, he sent me to a meeting for Ticket Force and Drive. I went to that meeting. The client requested, she asked me where Brian was. I said Brian was unable to make it to this meeting. And she was furious. She said, well, you tell Brian we're not going to pay him any more design fees. He cost us $118,000 in construction change orders for Ticket Force and Drive. You tell him he's a bad architect and you're working for a bad architect. When I came back to the office, I told him they have a problem paying you the fees. They seem to think there's a lot of change orders for this project. Were there a lot of change orders? He said, yes, there were quite a few. And that's basically it. He was kind of nonchalant about it. About a week and a half later, he and Bridget called me in their office, in Brian's office. He said, you're not telling me everything that's going on in these meetings. I said, yes, I am. I take very thorough meeting minutes and documentation. He said, you're not telling me everything. You're not telling me everything. What are you not telling me? I said, the only thing I did not tell you from that meeting was that they said you were a bad architect and I was working for a bad architect. I did not initially tell him that because I felt it would hurt his feelings. In hindsight, I should have had the owner relay that message. I got caught up in the crossfire. He shot the messenger and fired me on that spot. Okay, I went and applied for unemployment. I was turned.
Ms. Rawls, let me interrupt both of you. I think that's in the packet. We're aware of it.
Sure.
And I'd like to stick with the merits of the case that we're talking about. I appreciate that, but we're not an employment judge or any of those things.
Okay, I understand.
And I'd like to just point out a couple things in two sentences. 99% of that is not true. She told me 3 weeks later, I said, as the owner of the firm, you should have reported back to me right away. All those change orders were justifiable. I didn't fire her. So just to clarify that, the time is very important here, as yours is, as mine is, as all the board members. The truth
at that. Okay. So let me, I think...
The reason why we're here is for the use of my seal. You don't use a seal. You do not...
Okay, I'm not... excuse me. If you guys... I'd like to open it up for questions or discussion from the board. If anybody has any questions, Neil, Mr. Jones.
The investigator is Paul Warner. He's not here anymore. So who's taking
it? Adriana.
So? Is there anything you want to, is there anything you can tell us?
No, not. The investigation's been a lot of just back and forth.
I had one question. My question is, was there any unauthorized use of your seal after she left the company? Or are we talking about it all happened while she was your employee?
It was during the time of her employment. Yes, I was copied on some of these coordination emails. But again, all of these plans were permitted. Right?
So my question is, if you saw that she was sending emails and copying you where she was stamping RFIs, did you ask her not to do that, or did you?
In some instances, verbally, as well as through email. You're not to use the seal unless I review prior to issue. And just to make another point, everything that she worked on has been redone after the fact.
Okay, yeah, well, that's not, again, that's not what the case is about.
Right.
Understood. Thank you. Does anybody have any other questions?
May I make a statement?
Let me see if anybody else has questions for Ms. Rolls.
How did the seal get on the drawing, sir?
It resided in the title block. So it's an X reference locked as part of the drawing when it loads up. So she would have to go into that, change the date, remake the PDF, and then issue a PDF.
How did the signature get on there?
Well, wait a second. All we're talking about are RFIs.
RFIs and some coordination
that don't need a seal.
Correct.
But to
so
me,
it got to that level where it was used without my authorization, essentially.
But you had provided your seal, you know, it was on your title block already, and your signature was also on the server.
Correct.
Are the signature and
when
seal,
you turn the drawings in for permit, you know, of course you have to seal.
But are the seal and signature one object in your
separate
CAD?
Layers?
Separate layers,
block.
But
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Ms. Rolls, yeah?
The board, he has accused somebody else of doing the same thing back in April of last year, and that person was brought before the board.
I have not made that accusation.
You did. It's on the board meeting notes.
Okay. That's again, yeah, that, I want to stay away from that. I will say from, again, this is my individual perspective, as a board member, is that it is the registrant's responsibility to secure the seal. And I think by having it on the server and on the drawings, you are given latitude to your employees to some extent, or the impression that they have some authorization to use it. I think by the fact that she was copying you on all the emails, you know, if you saw that as an issue, you should have stopped it immediately, changed the provisions with your seal, or terminating employment, if that's what you saw fit. I see this more as an internal company issue than an actual fraudulent use.
Okay.
I'm leaning that way as well. I was going to look up, we have a substantive policy statement, I can't remember the number of it, that talks about electronic seals and the use of electronic seals and signatures, and it's very explicit in that policy statement that says it is the registrant's responsibility to ensure security of their seal and signature. I actually, just from a personal perspective, my seal is embedded in the Revit drawing, it's embedded in the CAD drawing. I actually physically sign in Bluebeam every sheet that goes out. No one in my office has my password to sign every sheet. So that's how I deal with it. And that's not how everybody in my firm deals with it, but that's how I deal with it.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that, you know, we're not here to lecture anyone. I think there's issues, I think, a little bit on both sides. But again, in my case, this is an internal issue and not necessarily a forgery or fraudulent use issue. Anybody else has any thoughts on it?
I will make a motion to dismiss, Mr. Chair.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion to dismiss on the table and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Did I say we still have several people here? Is Mr. Mohammed Mapar here? Okay. So we're going to move on to item 6F1. This is a compliance monitoring investigation. Respondent is Mohammed Mapar, civil engineer, 31926. And in October of 2012, the board accepted a consent agreement with the respondent that required him to provide peer review of his next three projects involving structural or retaining walls. Registrant has not done any of those projects over the last 5 years, and so I think, and somebody's going to have to correct me if I'm misremembering this, this came to the board in the last, I guess in October of 2017 to see if we should continue monitoring or change the consent agreement to close it out. So that came up in 2017. The board, in October, the board offered a revised consent agreement that would have included a restriction of practice on structural engineering. And I think Mr. Mapar is not interested in that. So that's why we're here today. Does that sound about right?
Yes.
Okay. If, Mr. Mapar, if you could please state your full name and address the board.
Mohammed Mapar, M-A-H-D-A-R.
Thank you. And what would you like the board to know?
Well, I've been a registered engineer over here in the state of Arizona for over 21 years, and I've done a lot of buildings. I only made one error in one 15-foot retaining wall. And then when I received that consent agreement that for me not to do any structural work, I was wondering why the new board is redoing the previous board's decision.
And
because I haven't had any client for me to do any retaining wall. It isn't that I didn't want to do it. I did contact those engineers that the board suggested. And I wrote them a letter. They wrote me a nice letter back. They said they'd be happy to do that. However, if I don't have any client for retaining wall, what am I going to do?
Okay, thanks, Mr. Mapar.
That was my problem. I've done many, many different kind of building, different structures, and without any problems at all. And in this retaining wall that kind of failed, there was no harm done to anybody. So I was questioning.
Does anybody have the actual text of the original consent agreement?
Well, I didn't bring anything here because I had provided all of that to the new board. When the thing was resolved, I threw all of that out.
Well, so let me explain. The intent is not to throw all that out. We're just trying to figure out, it's been over 5 years, and there's been no activity in that front. We thought that it might be appropriate to find another solution. We're not throwing out, and we'll stand by the agreement if that's what it's appropriate. My question is, I'd like to know what the original consent agreement said. Did it say that, you know, you needed three peer reviews of retaining walls, or did it say of structural design?
It's retaining wall.
Retaining wall specific, okay.
We don't have that in this package for this board meeting. We did have it in October.
Okay.
Yeah. That was restriction on retaining walls. So I think the thing last month, though, whenever this happened, was we were trying to clear it off the books as a investigation, you know, because we didn't have we had three projects, but we didn't have a time frame or anything. So, I mean, I think there's a couple options on this. Either this one just goes away and we just revert back to the original one and it's just open until three projects are done. Another option would be to revert to the original one and get rid of the peer review and, you know, either require a course in retaining wall design, and that would solve the issue, or just I think that would be, it could be an either or.
Or we could change the condition. Instead of being three next retaining wall projects, we could change it to three structural designs, peer reviews, if he was interested in that, and once he fulfilled that.
Right, but I don't think that goes to the court. You know, I think it was a retaining wall issue.
Retaining wall specific issue.
So, I mean, but a course in retaining wall design, you know, I mean, that would be, I mean, I think that would solve, could solve the issue too. You know, I don't, I mean, the whole thing wasn't to harm you in any way. It was just, I think we're trying to, since we didn't have anything came up, it was just kind of clearing it off the books.
I'd be more than happy to have other engineers to check my records. But however, I cannot find anybody to come to me. And normally they come to me for doing structural analysis.
Right.
But nobody has come to me for retaining walls. And I have written a letter to the board several times. Nobody has come to me for retaining walls.
Right.
I have done many, many different structures without any failure. And that's my question.
You can't generate the project.
To other engineers, check my work.
So
I think your idea is a great idea. I mean, Mr. Mopper, would you be, I mean, in the interest of not having to continue to report to the board periodically and in the interest of the board not having to do that, would you be willing to substitute in your consent agreement the need for peer review and instead of that use a course on retaining walls?
Absolutely.
I think that's a fair...
I think we could issue a new... I mean, I think we'd have to issue a new consent agreement.
Now, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Yeah.
If I get any retaining wall client, I'd be more than happy. I've done many, many different kind of retaining wall. As a matter of fact, I did several of those in this particular project, and none of them are wrong. What happened? The contractor backfilled the wall 98%. And he shouldn't have done that. It's 90%. So the water can go down to the drainage system. So he had a lot of problems here, but I'm not questioning that.
I'm not sure you understood that he has to do the course.
I think
it sounded to me like if he gets that type of work. You sure?
Thank you, understood.
Well, maybe I mean, if somebody's going to make a motion, we should say it clearly so he can understand.
I'm sure would it be, I mean, we have a signed consent agreement. We have the second one that isn't signed. We have to void that one out.
Well, if it's not signed, it just goes away.
Yeah. But we probably have the formal hearing.
Just reject.
We don't have a hearing, do we? There's no, because there's no compliance issue.
Oh, okay. Okay, so there was no form. So no. That's just non-signed. It just goes away.
It was just an alternate.
Okay.
It was in the packet.
I think, Jason, what the board will be doing would just be offering an alternate consent agreement to the current agreement that would just have a substitution of the term.
Okay. That would make sense.
Yeah.
So I would make a motion to offer an alternate consent agreement or addition to the consent agreement that would be instead of three peer reviews of the next three retaining wall projects, would be to take a 1 hour minimum retaining wall design class.
Acceptable to the board?
Approved by the board.
Second.
Mr. Hunt, did you have a question?
Yeah, the current, I just went some confusion cleared up, I guess. The current consent that we offered to him has an indefinite restriction of practice, so we're saying that consent just goes away.
Yes.
Right.
I think what we're saying is instead of that revised consent,
the original.
Right. If approved, yeah, would be the original, except instead of peer review, it would be a structure or a retaining wall design course.
Okay.
Within what period of time?
Within 1 year.
Yeah.
Mr. Mopper?
Would you recommend more engineers or the same ones?
No.
No,
you don't have to worry about it.
A class.
So you wouldn't need any engineers.
Okay.
All you would need to do is take a course, submit for the board a course on retaining wall design, get the board to say, yes, this is appropriate, then you take the course and you're done.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Mopper did drive from California yesterday.
Holy cow.
Well, I'm a licensed engineer in California, too, for 40 years. I've never had any problems there.
But we appreciate your comments.
I think this is a reasonable solution because the indefinite restriction of practice was all-encompassing, all structural engineering.
Right.
He's got a narrow area of concern here that we don't want to...
Okay, so we have first and second, right?
Yep. We have a motion and a second to modify the consent agreement. Mr. Jones, did you have a question?
On the respondent's documents, technicality, and when he signs his name, he's not, doesn't have PE after it. Should he be doing that?
You don't have to.
You don't have to.
You can, but you don't have to.
It's just a letter.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table and a second. All in favor of the revised consent agreement?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Mr. Mopper, thank you for coming, and hopefully that works.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for
driving.
Okay.
Can you sign birthday cards?
I think we still have people here for 7A. Is anybody here for any other items?
Whatever other things.
Other than 7A?
Yeah, 6B2 as well, Mr. Elson.
Is he still here?
Yes, he is.
Charles, and I apologize. I didn't have you on my list. We'll take this one on and then your case, Mr. Allison. I apologize.
Which one are we doing?
That's fine.
So what is this one we're doing?
Which one's this
one? We are doing 7A.
7A.
Richard Herring, the third.
Yes.
And this was an issue where Mr. Herring submitted for authorization to take the ARE in 2014. The board made an error, and instead of issuing authorization to test, issued a license without taking and passing the ARE. According to the AG, the license is void, and so we're here to figure out what needs to be done in this case.
And Dr. Angel, if I make one correction to that, the board didn't actually
grant a license.
The board granted authorization to take the exam. Staff mistakenly sent a communication later. So, yeah.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Donald.
So, good morning, board. My name is Barry Willits. I'm counsel for Mr. Herring.
And I'm Richard Herring.
Thank you, Mr. Herring, for coming. And I think before you say anything, I apologize on behalf of the board. I think nobody should have to go through the situation you've been going through. So,
thank you for allowing me to appear before the board today. Like you had said, we're here because I applied for initially the ARE with the board. On April 4th, I submitted my application to the board. On the 6th, the evaluator then approved the application and was provided to the licensing manager for final approval. This is from documentation that I have, correspondence that has been provided to the board. I also have it printed for the use. On May 12th, the licensing manager ran a background check, and I quote, before issuing certification and registration. That was the email correspondence that I received, at which time the mistake was found for a violation that I was unaware of. On June 2nd, the documents were updated and transmitted to the board. On June 10th, the updated documents and correspondence was sent to the licensing manager for review. On June 12th, the board will be reviewing for final approval, and then it also stated within 2 weeks you will receive approval, receive your package for approval containing your registration number. And then on June 27th, after the meeting, I received an email stating that you have received approval from the board and received my registration number. So that was the documentation that was provided once I found out what was going on. I provided that to Robert Stamm. I'll go through those dates as well. So on January 30th, I contacted NCARB to request to sit for the AREs. And my question to them was, I have a unique situation. In fact, I'm already registered with the state of Arizona, and I'm looking to sit for the AREs. Their response to me was they did not know how to respond, and they were going to do some research and get back to me. So then I also had a follow-up question to them to confirm the education requirements. Because I don't have a degree, there's certain requirements, alternates that I can go through for NCARB certification, which I was seeking for and making sure that I had that information correct. On February 1st, I received a phone call from the
and CARB representative, letting me know that I could contact the Arizona board for authorization to test. And I also received an email in regards to my other question regarding my alternate education. On February 2nd, I received a phone call from an NCARB representative that left a quick voicemail. The name was Michelle. I returned that call, left a message, but received no reply. On February 6th, I received a call from Mr. Robert Stamm, and he left me a voicemail. I replied. We then got in contact later that afternoon on the 6th. When I spoke to Mr. Stamm, I was informed that the NCARB had contacted them questioning the reason why I received my architectural registration without sitting for the AREs. That triggered a review of the paperwork. They only saw 60 months worth of verified work experience and believed that it was a clerical error. My reply was, it was not a clerical error. I followed up after I received the information from the board and was informed that there was no follow-up required and that I would just have to submit my renewal and my affidavit for the seal. I also asked for an opportunity to present the information that I have and pull together my archive records. Mr. Stamm agreed to take a look at those and we reconvened later that week. We reconvened on February 9th. Robert Stamm told me at the beginning of the meeting that regardless of the information provided, that my registration was going to be void and I was receiving an official letter. On February 13th, I filed a complaint with the Ombudsman due to the fact there was no due process in the removal of my registration. On February 15th, I received an invitation from Melissa Cornelius, did I say that correctly? To receive an invitation to be today, here at today's meeting. And I was sent the letter in that email, because at this time I still have not received the official letter. On February 26th, I received a certified letter from the board stating that my license was going to be void and I could no longer practice architecture. The entire process from when I called NCARB to our meeting today was only 4 weeks for that entire process. From the time that NCARB contacted the board to the time that my registration was void was 24 hours. And this was a process that was reviewed over the course of 80 some days with the board, 84 days of processing. So that is how I am here today. That is the unfortunate event that has taken place for me to be in front of you all today. I would like to give a little bit background on myself. My competence as an architect and both my experience. I'm a senior architect at M&W. I've been an active architect for the past 4 years since I received my registration. I deal with some of the most complex and hazardous buildings in the world. I deal with H5 occupancies. Those are the buildings that I design. I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with H5, but that's semiconductor. So I've been identified as an industry leader, an expert in the core team for Global ATF, which is Advanced Technology Facilities, by my clients and both my employer. I lead large design and construction teams. I'm requested to advise and lead projects all over the world. And I'm a leading expert in VDC, virtual design and construction, helping to take design and construction to the next level to be able to review and validate the information prior to it ever actually becoming real. An example of my R&Rs on my last project, it was to submit a line, drawings, documentations, and AM&Ms with the AHJ. I align, coordinate drawings with the owner
and construction, and I work with a large team of architects, in-house, and consultants to execute my projects. My last project was over 800 sheets issued, approximately 170 of those were architectural, 210 specs issued, over 3,200 sheets were issued for specs, 50 of them being architectural. There was well over 6,000 man hours for just the architectural team alone. The project was in the magnitude of the hundreds of millions of dollars. This is what I do on a typical basis. These are the types of projects that I work on. I've received project and individual awards from clients and my employer. I have been found competent, well, what I thought to be competent by the AZ Board of Technical Registration in 2014, my employers and my clients. And I have designed and constructed projects in the magnitude of billions of dollars over the course of my career. As far as my representation, I represented myself honestly and truthfully while maintaining timely and correspondence throughout the review process. I've done nothing wrong, but now I'm being punished for requesting to further my career and take the ARES. My work experience is what I primarily have. It's not the traditional path. That is primarily attributed to my documented learning disability of dyslexia. So with dyslexia, due to this disability, I excel on hands-on problem solving. But with the more traditional educational path, it becomes increasingly more complex due to this disability. So most of my experience has been on the job. Prior to involving the ombudsman, unfortunately, I have not been provided options or the ability to rectify the situation. If this was indeed a clerical error, my question is, when did that clerical error take place and why? Because through the documentation that I have, it seemed like everything was being, that the AREs were being waived in support of my experience. That was my understanding. I'm willing to do whatever is necessary to maintain my registration and prove my competence. A decision to void my registration has not accounted for the ramifications to my company, my clients, projects, career, and personal life. I've been personally devastated by the information provided to me by the board. I'm also professionally devastated by the information that's been provided me to the board. Receiving the architectural registration was one of the proudest and greatest achievements of my life. Excuse me. At no fault of my own, this has been taken away. I'm not sure how I will recover from this. Excuse me. I don't know how I can never trust this system again. How will it be possible that I will not be deceived again? Because my understanding was everything went through the proper process. My identity as an architect will be lost. I will not be able to perform to the full capacity of my current position. The potential setbacks of my career, at a minimum, will be 5 to 7 years. I will have no opportunity for employment outside of my current employer, nor the ability to be self-employed. I will have lost 4 years of experience as if it was void, erased from existence. I don't know how I will be able to explain this to clients, AHJs, coworkers, and family.
this meeting has been the only opportunity that I have to appeal. The action of voiding my registration will have catastrophic impacts on my life. Please consider my request to maintain my registration. Again, I am willing to do whatever is necessary to maintain my registration and prove my competence to the board.
That's all. Mr. Herring. Thank you.
I'd like to just say a couple of minutes worth, if you don't mind, Board.
Yes, please. Couple minutes.
You know, we obviously have a tough situation here. We have an error. The error wasn't perpetrated by Mr. Herring. Now we have to figure out what to do about it. And unfortunately, it seems to be what to do about it is a rush to void the license, which harms Mr. Herring. It exposes him to liability. It limits his job opportunities. It could get him fired. So I would respectfully ask the board conclude that it has discretion under 32.106 subsection 9 to use its discretion to craft a path forward that balances the interests of protecting the public versus Mr. Herring's interests. He's been an exemplary professional. He works on kick-ass, incredible projects with incredibly kick-ass, sophisticated teams of engineers and architects. He's doing this all over the world. This is important work. And I don't see how just voiding the license is in the public interest. Because of the support teams he has at M&W, his co-workers, the projects, I'm sure if we were to sit down, we could figure out limitations or things that he needs to do so that the public is protected while he satisfies whatever requirements he needs to satisfy to become a full-fledged registrant. So that's our plea to you guys. We just want somebody to work with us and say, well, what, would you be willing to do this so that he can maintain his license?
Who's M&W?
M&W is his employer.
Is it Stamp or something? I mean, I've never heard of them. Are they in Phoenix?
They are in Phoenix. They have a local office here in Phoenix, but it is a global company.
They're headquartered in Germany, I think.
Where are you located here?
In Chandler.
Okay. How many years of experience do you now have?
I have about 15 years of experience.
To take the ARE would be difficult for you.
Well, I was actually requesting to take the ARE so that I could get my NCARB certification. That's what triggered this entire process, was my request to take the test. Because when I initially submitted to the board, it came back that I didn't have to take the test. I received my registration. So I was going through the process for NCARB to get that certification so that I could have a nationally accredited and have reciprocity so I could seek licensure or registration in other states or other jurisdictions.
So you learned the craft through just experience? You didn't go to college and get a degree?
I did not. I started in construction and worked my way through design to where I am today.
So is the loss of the 4 years because you weren't working under some sort of architect or some sort of licensed type architect?
I think he's just talking about the time it might take to get through the ARE. I mean, it's not, you can do it in less time than that.
Okay. Do you stamp the drawings right now that you produce?
Thank you.
Are there others in your firm that are capable of stamping your work?
There are multiple architects that work on a project, so yes, it's necessary then that could be a course of action.
So your employment could still continue regardless of your status as an active architect. I guess I'm curious.
Not in the same capacity that I currently do.
For example, he could no longer be the lead architect or team leader. If M&W is inherently cyclical work, and if there's a downturn in clean rooms or chips or whatever, construction, well, wouldn't you get rid of the guy who doesn't have his license first?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, not if it's
somebody's skill.
He certainly needs his license to move up in the company, which is another reason I was looking to get NCARB certified.
What's your title right now?
Senior architect.
I also wanted to know, I mean, you mentioned M&W is headquartered in Germany?
I believe so.
Do you guys do work? You mentioned you did work throughout the world. Is that okay? And what percentage of the work is international, or you know, just
the majority of the work has been in the States. There has been projects in Israel, and I've done consulting with Ireland and a few other locations, Singapore.
And how much of that work is actually in Arizona?
I'm sorry?
How much of your work is actually in Arizona?
There's a large confidential client that I do quite a bit of work for here in Arizona.
But the buildings are in Arizona and you stamp the drawings here in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, you started by saying, I mean, a lot of the work is worldwide. I'm assuming none of that would be affected whether you had an Arizona license or not. It's your Arizona work that would be affected.
My Arizona work, my title, and what, basically, being able to consider myself being an architect.
He wouldn't have any license.
Right, but having a license here wouldn't change anything if you were doing a project in Germany or Ireland.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm kind of interested in maybe going to an executive session and getting legal advice from the attorney on how to handle this.
He would do it in an open session.
Oh, okay. Well?
Well, there are things I can do in open session and then legal advice that the board may want in executive session. The essential problem, there are a number of different issues here. The biggest problem is the board doesn't really actually have a decision to make. With regards to this, the license simply isn't valid. It's not a valid license. Mr. Herring did not meet the requirements for licensure. The license was mistakenly granted by board staff. What the board voted on was an application to take the exam. The staff member absolutely made a mistake, but a staff member mistake can't bind the board. A staff member mistake can't authorize the board to do something that doesn't have the statutory authority to do. The problem is, at this point, there's no question of whether Mr. Herring has a valid license. He doesn't. And the last 4 years, there's nothing that can be done to go back and pick that up. Moving forward, Mr. Herring certainly may qualify for a license, but that would be entirely separate issue. It's a situation in which I greatly empathize. I absolutely empathize 100%. But if, for example, I applied to the medical board to take an exam and they sent me a license to practice, once the mistake was discovered, I would have to stop practicing. The board wouldn't be able to say, Mr. Donald, well, we think you're a nice guy, so we'll let you continue on. That's where the board winds up developing liability. So there are a number of different issues here, and I would be happy to address a number of issues in the executive session as well. There are aspects of it I can certainly discuss in open session. However, the biggest problem is simply that it's not a matter of the board revoking a license or suspending a license. The board never actually granted a license.
Why are we here?
We're here primarily so that Mr. Herring and his attorney can have an opportunity to express themselves to the board, and absolutely there may be a path moving forward for Mr. Herring to become licensed. But when, for example, questions come up concerning qualifications for licensure, there are things that the board may be able to consider moving forward for future licensure, but in terms of an existing license.
I have a question for Mr. Herring. In this stage, you don't have to have a degree to get become an architect, but you have to have 8 years of experience under another license or registrant. Do you have that?
8 years of experience, yes, I do. And I've actually gone through the NCAR requirements for the AXP because I always sought to get my NCAR certification. So that's been completed. Okay. One of the requirements for that certification is you have to have licensure for 3 years. So then after I had licensure for 3 years, I went back to the NCARP and I said, I want to make sure that I have this process complete. And once I did that, that opened up this issue, and now I'm left with this situation to no fault of my own.
The thing that's missing is the testing.
It's the test. It's the exam.
I have a question he has 15 years of experience.
And when I submitted, I had...
We don't have any statute that talks about 15 years of experience.
When I submitted for my original application, I submitted with the documentation of 3 architects of 9 years, between 9 and 10 years of experience at that time.
So, Mr. Herring, you apply to take the ARE. The board approved this at the meeting. When you ended up in a different place, what did you say to yourself? This is a miracle, or how did this happen?
I called to make sure that it was correct, because it was very rare. I know that I've talked to people that have never taken their AREs. I know that there's licensed, registered.
But at that point, did you understand that you needed the ARE, or I understand that you got a certificate from staff.
I understand that it was waived based off of my experience. That was my understanding.
Were you told that?
Yes, because that's why I followed up after I received the information, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to have an issue later on down the line.
Were you present at the meeting that we approved you for the ARE?
I was not.
Okay.
Who is the staff person who specifically told you were waived because of 10 years' experience?
That was a phone call to the board, to their number, to make sure that everything was processed properly.
What was the question you asked when you called?
That I did receive my registration without taking the AREs.
Did you just call a mainline and ask the person?
I did. I wanted to make sure that the information that I received was correct.
Essentially, what happened is you said you have a license. The person looked at the database and said yes. You didn't talk to somebody to say there may have been an error.
That was my call to find out, to make sure that the process was there. And then through the email correspondence that I had, they were stating that they were seeking registration. So I had no reason to believe otherwise.
Yeah, I can see the questions, but I also think, I mean, this is on the board. This is on us.
Yeah.
Showing that
by error. We made a mistake. Yeah, we did.
What's the outstanding issue?
I have 2 questions. I mean, I guess the bigger question moving forward, I got one question looking forward, one looking back is, is there any path to licensure that anybody can think of? And maybe looking back, I mean, what happens to the projects that Mr. Herring has stamped and worked on?
There's a note in one of these letters, I think it was dated February 8th, that says all he has to do is take the ARE and he's approved for it. Is that correct? Is that what everybody read? Now, I don't know what that means. Is that a long time process, or is that one test?
Yes. No, it's five exams.
Okay.
Is that what's missing?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you can take them. Yeah. You can take them. Of course,
like we did.
Yeah. Well,
you could.
Which is what he had.
Schedule
one,
two, pro metric. But yeah.
Just the one piece of the puzzle that's missing.
Yeah.
is what the ARE.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer your second question about what about the stamp drawings that are out there. I talked to the America's General Counsel yesterday about that, so they're looking in to see what the scope is, but for the ongoing projects, they're going to have somebody else on the team review and stamp them, so, and we haven't gotten to the old projects yet.
Thank you.
I just don't see, based on what Mr. Holland said and what the law is, that there is any wiggle room about the licensure right now. I mean, definitely can be approved to take the ARE and take the test at that point in time, but I mean, if I'm understanding correctly, our hands are completely tied on this. I mean, we don't.
I appreciate the wiggle room comment, because that's, I just respectfully disagree with Mr. Donald on that. I believe there is wiggle room. He said no decision is made, it just is. Well, a decision was made that it's void. A decision was made to take them off the website. A decision was made that there was an administrative error. There's decisions being made.
But those aren't by this board. Those were by staff.
I understand all of that. But so now what are we going to do, because we have this problem? You have a lot of discretion to solve problems you've created. I don't agree that the license is void. It's been issued. It's not, doesn't exist in the other as a void thing. The cases that Mr. Donald relies on never uses the word void. The main case is a liquor license who was claimed by two competing parties. One party was properly granted the license. The other party was improperly granted the license. And the Supreme Court said, well, the party who had it properly granted owns the license, not the party who had it improperly granted. There wasn't any discussion about it being void as to this guy. I mean, the license was still in effect, even though they had given it to this guy wrongly. There wasn't any discussion about how to unwind what happened to this guy who thought he had a valid
But it was improperly granted.
It was improperly granted, and that's why he lost. His rights were inferior to the other guy.
Situation here. I mean, I'm sympathetic, believe me, but it appears that we don't have the ability just to waive his requirement to take the ARE.
What about something less, or something more in the middle? What about he agrees to pass the exam by this date, and in the meantime, the license stays in effect with certain limitations that are consistent with the public interest and with the statutory framework.
Can it be held in abeyance?
I have no idea.
See, that's a legal question. That
yeah, Mr. Donald. Part of his requirement is to have the ARE, right, the
Absolutely.
Licensure? And
yeah,
he doesn't have that.
He
doesn't make the requirements. Is that a correct statement?
I would be happy to provide legal advice to the board if the board would like it. In terms of whether he meets licensing requirements, I can't speak to that right now. I don't know as of this moment whether or not he meets licensing requirements. I can provide legal advice to the board in any questions related to this issue, but I really don't know if it meets licensing departments right now.
If we tell you that get a license, you either have to have passed the exam or have been licensed in another state for at least 10 years.
Well, that would, sure, he wouldn't meet the licensing requirements then, as he's not passed the exam and he's not been licensed in another state for 10 years. But again, there are three different real questions, and they're all kind of wrapped up in the same thing, and the one has to do with the license between 2014 and when the board became aware that staff error had granted a license to somebody who the board did not grant a license to and who wasn't qualified by the board's statutes. Then the second issue is moving forward issues related to the company, and then the third is moving forward issues related to Mr. Herron. And I think that there's nothing the board is able right now to do about issues related to an incorrectly given license. The board didn't give the license. There's no question of that. And while I can empathize strongly, a staff member sending out a license does not create a license for an individual with a valid license. With issues related to the future licensing of Mr. Herring, it sounds as if he would be an excellent applicant. It sounds as if he would be a credit to the profession, absolutely, but he would need to meet the licensing requirements at that time. The board has its statutory requirements for minimum qualifications for licensure, and I can't change those.
Mr. Donald, one question. Is there a... I'm understanding from what you're saying that, you know, the license is void. It was never really issued. So he doesn't have a license. He has to take the exam and, you know, meet all the other requirements to get his license. And I do believe we can't issue licenses without the exams unless he meets, you know, the 10 years of licensure and or having a license in another state that has the same registration requirements. But could we exempt him or decide not to enforce cases against him for the use of a title architect over the next year while he pursues his, you know, licensure? And then, you know, in a year, if he hasn't passed the test or become licensed, then, you know, we do that. But just not enforce...
Legally, there is no way I can recommend the board not enforce its statutes or advise any individual that it will bind itself to not enforcing its statutes. There's no possible way I can give that legal advice.
Okay.
But the board has the discretion to enter into agreements with the folks it regulates, and if we were to give something, we agree not to stamp things and do other things.
Right.
The board would have thinking. The discretion, would it not, to give something. We won't pursue enforcement for X, Y, and Z.
That's along the lines of what I was thinking, is that, you know, if within the company, within the projects, it's better to call yourself an architect for the foreseeable future, but committing to not stamp and other things, we could, you know, but apparently we can't, you know, allow you to use the title architect or something along those lines. So you don't think, again, that, when you mentioned it earlier, it didn't make sense to me. Under 32.106.9, it does say that the board has the power to do other things necessary to carry out the purposes of this chapter. I mean, that seems so broad that I don't think it really means anything, but would it give us the authority to, you know, exempt him from, or allow him to use the word architect for a limited amount of time? Not a license, but, so not practice, but title use. And I think your answer is no, Mr. Donald, but we're going to ask.
There are a number of issues that would be attached to that. The board really can't authorize use of the title architect by somebody who doesn't meet the qualifications to be registered as an architect.
But we already did, though, right?
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Right. And again, this is an analogous situation would be if a secretary at the Supreme Court sent you a license to practice law. That would not actually bind the Bar of Arizona. That would be that secretary. There could be a lot of blowback on that secretary, but that wouldn't...
But would I be practicing law?
Oh, you could go practice law while you had that license, but as soon as somebody realized the mistake, then that license would be invalid. And the next problem would be if you were to represent somebody once people realized you'd never been to law school, never actually passed the bar, and the license was granted by a secretary, there would be a degree of liability I couldn't even imagine. Associated with everybody.
That's the ones going forward, though.
That would be going forward, correct.
Not the ones. Because they thought they were licensed at the time.
I couldn't speak to corporate liability in this situation. I advise the board, but my my instinct would be that the company would have been acting in good faith based upon their belief that he had a valid license, which at the time he certainly appeared to have.
Right.
So that the company would have done their due diligence by checking with the board, check whether or not he was licensed. Again, that's I'm not the company's attorney, but I would imagine the company would certainly have a very strong argument that way.
But it seems to me, based on your experience and expertise, if you call it an architect or not, your boss knows how good you are. I don't think they care as much about that as maybe you do, but I don't think they would not have you work on these projects, have other architects there. Because if you're the man, you're the man, and they'll figure a way out to get the license and who's going to seal a report. So I don't know your company situation, but I'd be surprised if they'd say, oh, I can't use this guy now because he's not registered.
That would be wrong for your company to do that.
But it's only employment within my company.
So maybe you have to buy some time in your company so you get through the examination or do that part of it as well.
I feel like I need a little bit of legal advice on a couple of items.
We'll move to go to executive session.
Okay. Do we need a second?
No.
Okay. Second. Let's take a few minutes in executive session.
You leave. Let me.
Nice try.
Mr. Winters, are we recording again?
You're now recording.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we've taken legal advice. Does anybody have anything else they want to say? I'm not necessarily speaking for the board. I'm speaking for myself, but I think it's an incredibly unfortunate situation. I would like to help in any way we can, but we can't change the law or break statute. So if you guys find a way where a license could be, you know, legally granted, and we can get concurrence from our AG, I'm all for it. But until that point, I apologize. I don't think there's anything I could support. Anything else? And if not, I think that would conclude this discussion for today. All right. Thank you, guys, and sorry about that.
The documents that were printed?
Excuse me?
The documents that were printed? Is that going into some record with the board? Or is it just...
Where you didn't see Mr. Sam at earlier time?
Some of them were. Some came after the point. There's information in there from Ed Budsley, and then there's information in there from the letter that I received or invitation for attending.
Okay.
Thanks,
Mr.
Herring.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go back. We still have someone here for 6B2.
And I'm recusing myself on this one, too.
You are? Okay. P17095, James Elson, Register Architect. This is in regard to the hangar building for Rubber Industrial at Stellar Airport in Chandler. A board received a complaint that responding was contracted to complete plans and construct a hangar within 4 months. Respondent failed to complete the project after being paid in full on June 6, 2016 and has been repeatedly proclaimed dishonest with the client about the project's progress. The board performance investigation and concluded that there were no violations of the Boards Practice Act. However, respondent could have engaged in better communication with the client, and it's recommending a letter of concern for failing to appropriately communicate with the client and keep the client updated with the progress of the project. So with that, if you would please provide your full name for the board.
His name is Robert Allison.
Thank you, Mr. Allison. Is there anything you'd like to say to the board? And first of all, sorry it's taken so long. You've been very patient.
Now, with regard to your statement about communications or the letter of communications with the client, he's a longtime friend of mine, and I think he was frustrated too. And I don't know if you read it. We had the architectural group in December, and we had civil issues. But anyway, he's still a friend of mine. I talk to him every week or two.
Thank you.
Chair, excuse me. Sir. I asked that this be pulled from the consent, only because within the documentation, Mr. Ellison stamped the landscape architecture plans on a commercial project, and I think that's not appropriate. So I was just going to suggest a letter of concern. We clarify that those documents should have been signed by a registered landscape architect. That was my only. Everything else is fine. I just wanted that added to the little concern.
Let me clarify that, because my first job, this was when I was in college, was in 1969, working for A. Lane Smith, working for this. So I've got that, and I remember when the registration came up for landscape architecture, and I called the board specifically, and the board informed me that as long as it was on projects that I prepared, I could do the landscape design. Because I don't go out and specifically sign landscape drawing. I mean, that's not my forte, but I've had a lot of experience, and I'm not rich in landscape. I specifically clarified that. And I've had it come up with Scottsdale, too, and I've told them the same thing. I called the board about it, and they've, now Phoenix is different. I have to get Phoenix will not let me stand it, but anyway, I specifically this has been years ago, but made that request because they had the concerns.
As I understand the practice, the landscape, because it's a commercial project, landscape documents are supposed to be stamped by a registered landscape architect. And I've run into the situation before, incidental work, and I suppose there's a judgment call on what's considered incidental to the project. But because it went through full review and a full project.
Mr. Gilmore, I think that's a good point. Sometimes it comes down to what's incidental practice. I mean, I'm a civil engineer, and when I do a roadway design, if there's a traffic signal, and we've done a lot of them, we'll use a civil stamp on a signal plan, even though it's an electric, typically, who does it. So I don't know the specifics of this case in that sense, if that was or wasn't appropriate, but maybe what the letter of concern could say is, one, remind communications with the client, and two, provide a reminder that landscape architect can only be performed to the extent that it's incidental to the project. And I think that, you know, that leaves a little bit more
clarification on that. Like I said, I specifically made the question, well, this has been years ago, but specifically called the board to make that determination. And also, I guess, wired out of this, but I always tell clients, don't just call the city and ask a planner or something. I mean, you'll get various responses, but I did specifically call the board to see if I was allowed to do that. And I said, no, as long as you are not practicing that solely, if it's incidental to your job, then yes, you can do it on a commercial project. So,
do you call this board and ask that question or the Scottsdale?
The architecture registration board. Mm-hmm.
This board.
Yeah, the state, Arizona, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, it's been 10 years ago or so, at least. Okay.
So do we have a motion or a proposed action?
I'd like to make a motion that we accept this particular case. And this is a letter of concern, and then just reference the fact that practice of landscape architecture should be stamped by a registered landscape architect unless it's characterized as incidental to the project. That was the only clarification I would add to the letter.
Perfect.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any additional discussion?
After the vote, can we explain to Mr. Elson what the letter of concern means? It may not be.
Sure. You can do it now, Neil, if you want.
You're in the chair.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Mr. Elson says, Mr. Jones was saying, a letter of concern is a non-disciplinary measure. It's simply a friendly reminder of your duties as a registrant. So.
I understand.
All right.
I've been registered for a long time. I've been living 40 years. Still out. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at my number and going, you're old. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your lunch has been delivered. Would you like to take a break?
Yes, if I can also say that we still do have a call.
We have a call for, 65. Anna Azari.
Let's hold that for about a half an hour.
No, let's not. that's the structural inspection. So let's take a 15-minute break for lunch.
Grab our lunch.
Yeah, grab our lunch and eat quick, but I think I'd like to get through that one before Jason leaves.
The same argument I'm going to have that I have on the...
All right, let's start recording again. We're back in session. we're going to take on agenda item 65, case number P18005, and we have the respondent, Anna Azari, appearing telephonically. So let's try her.
Automatic voice message system 62329364 is not available.
At
the tone, please record your message. When you
have
finished
recording,
you may hang up.
We can try another case and come back to this case if you want.
This message is for Ms. Anna Azari. This is the board meeting. We're giving you a call. It's about 1:39 p.m. We'll try you again in a little bit. And if we don't hear from you with the second call, then we're going to proceed with your case. Thank you.
So try a couple other cases and then come back to this one? All right. Let's go back to clean up the stuff we haven't done.
682 and 3.
682, Raimundo de Lao, non-registrant. So this was a person who was... listed as a project engineer on a website for Talavera Design. The respondent has passed away, so I don't think that's an issue. But I did want to bring the case to the board to ask, do we have a case against Talavera?
Yes.
Okay.
There are three cases that came in together.
Thank you, Jeff. All right, that was it.
Move to dismiss.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, 683. This is Rene Martinez Flores, PE 47518. And Mr. Flores was part of Talavera Design, so it's related to the previous case. I wanted to discuss it because it's listed for dismissal, but I had a couple questions. If you look on page 99 of the packet, the website and a resume he provided to the board refers to himself as a structural engineer. And he's not a structural engineer, he's just a civil engineer.
Just
a civil engineer. Lowly civil.
Lowly civil.
And I don't know, there were, you know, similar things along those lines where you know, he claimed that a beam was installed upside down, but the complaint claimed several more issues with knowledge and skill. Actually, I think the EAC even discussed, or the assessment discussed beam support and deflections as being other issues. And he admitted that he's the principal or a principal of Talavera, which is not registered. But I guess if that's getting taken care of technically, that's fine. My question then is more along the lines of he's saying he's a structural and he's not. And maybe a letter of concern is enough.
Concern.
But
I would agree.
I agree.
He says structural engineer. He didn't put him out to be a licensed structural engineer. I mean, I think it's all kind of ticky-tacky stuff, but yeah, I think a letter of concern.
Letter of concern reminding him,
In my understanding, just for clarification, is that that was Talavera's, who did the website, Mr. Talavera and Mr. Forrest did it.
Yeah, it's like even more reason not to do discipline, but just remind him that he shouldn't. Jason, was that a motion?
Sure, I'll make a motion to issue a letter of concern.
Second? Okay. Motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
6C1.
6C1.
How about B2?
We did.
Okay.
We did
that. That was the last guy.
Yeah.
6C1, Norris Ruiz with Skynet West. This is the complaint. This is a company that's providing drone
data.
And they claim we provide high-resolution, accurate, time-efficient, cost-effective way of obtaining different types of surveying data. You obtain topographic surveys of large or inaccessible terrain. We have the investigation, and staff recommended, or staff found that they did practice without registration. And offered to practice, and then recommended assurance of discontinuance and cost of investigation. So
they've already modified their website, it sounds like.
I didn't see that. I looked on their website yesterday, and I've got copies, and there's still language in there that says they're measuring heights and angles, and just all the things I went through and highlighted a bunch of them. Topographic maps, digital elevation maps, so yeah. I'm not sure that
Cultural analysis, earthwork volumes.
Yeah, so they haven't apparently modified their website. I think the numbers here are a little low. I mean, at least, I think at least we should go 500 with a fine and with an assurance of discontinuance.
And get back to them, let them know that we're still not satisfied with the website, I think, because it still has issues. To me, the main concern is that they say that, you know, they do aerial mapping and digital elevation maps and all these things, instead of saying, we collect data that can be used by registered surveyors to do these things. I think that's something where you've come up a lot on this drone cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the drone cases will be more of a problem moving forward with the board. Our concern with past board actions is that they could be held in the argument of R430-1013, where they're just a bona fide employee. So that's where we're kind of, are they employee of these things, and then handing it off to the registrant who sealed it?
But I think that goes back to the representing themselves to provide surveying services. I mean, it's, their contractual relationship was one thing, but their website says they do digital elevation maps, earthwork volumes and all that other stuff. That's what they, I think, can't say that. They can say they can collect the aerial data, and they have the sensors to provide the data to surveyors to analyze it and develop, you know, generate digital elevation maps. But
they do use a little bit of a non-conventional term where they say data retrieval, and I can give them the benefit of doubt that that's just data collection, and they're offering the service of flying this thing around and collecting data for a registrant to go ahead and analyze it at that point. So, you know, that part I'm comfortable with. It's when they say aerial mapping,
digital elevation,
they get into the heights and angles, reference geotagging, variety of land and infrastructure. And, you know, maybe one of these words by themselves or one of these phrases by themselves wouldn't be bad, but when you start adding them all up, they're going out there and providing topo surveys for people,
so if
according
you call,
to this website.
If it said topo data instead of topographic survey, that'd be good in your book?
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of good. It's a matter of softening it up. If they chose the words topo data over topo mapping, when you look at the definition of surveying, it's got map in it. So I don't know that there's a hard, fast answer.
To me, there's several ways to do it. I mean, one thing they can say is they can put a disclaimer at the bottom that says, we're not registered land surveyors. We just provide these services to support land surveyors. Or they could clarify that, you know, we collect these things for analysis by a surveyor.
Mr. Chair, I'm taking my leave.
All right.
See you next month.
Yep.
The term professional comes up several times on their website, too, and that's, I don't know that we regulate the term professional, but when you start combining that with all these things, it really does present a different picture. So I guess, Sean, it's there is some subjectivity. There's not one hard, quick answer.
But a disclaimer would make the board feel better. I just have to go back and explain.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that we're all on the same page.
We just want to make sure the public isn't confused that they can do land surveying. So they, you know, either better explain what they do or they clarify that they're not land surveyors, I think. Right, Jason?
Yeah, that makes sense. So do we need a motion on this?
We do need a motion if you want to revise the consent.
I'd like to revise the consent agreement and just change the dollar figure.
There's no fine right now, I think.
No, you need to.
There's just the cost of investigation.
Administrative penalty.
I'm sorry. I'd like to add the administrative penalty of $500 due in 90 days.
If not paid within 30, move to hearing.
If not signed,
Within 30, move to hearing.
Yes.
Thank you.
But maintaining the other requirements, the assurance of discontinuance and the cost of investigation.
That's correct. Just to be clear, that was just in addition to the existing language, which was very good, Mr. Thacker.
So I'll second that motion.
Sure.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Moving on to 6C3. This is the case 17074, Manuel Montano, PRLS.
He signed a consent.
We do have a signed consent.
He signed it, okay. Yeah. Good. And basically what he signed was to voluntarily surrender his land surveyor license.
Correct.
Not his civil.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
D1?
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll move to 6D1, HI 17020, Rick Hoffman. We'll come back to her. Oh, do you want to try her again now?
I just want to make sure she didn't get lost in the shuffle.
We'll do a couple more of these and come back to her, to give her until 2 o'clock or so. So 6D1, Hoffman. He has he signed a consent agreement. Letter of reprimand, $400, cost of investigation, and 2 peer reviews of his next home inspections.
Mr. Chair, I move we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, 6D4, This is a case for Fred Riggs, P18014, with M3 Engineering. And do we have a signed consent? Yeah, we do have a signed consent. So we do have a signed consent. He signed plans prepared by others who are not his bona fide employees. But he signed the consent, which encompassed reprimand, state suspension, professional ethics class, $2,000 penalty, and cost of investigation. Any discussion or motions on this?
Is this a related case?
No, this is on its own.
This is that Dwayne DeLarco guy again.
Yeah, it's the same.
Oh, is it DeLarco again?
Yeah, same guy as the solar thing. That's why I was a little confused this morning. Yeah. I was like, well, wait a minute. Yeah, it's going on.
And you said we did have a case against DeLarco.
Yeah. And this one's signed, so.
Yeah, this one is signed. And
Mr. Chair, I move we accept the signed consent agreement in P18-014.
Second.
Okay, motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Betty, again, next newsletter. Somebody who's good to explain what bona fide means and what you can do.
Anybody volunteering to write it?
How about maybe one of our past public members?
Mm-hmm. What about this guy right here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. How about the guy that's
There's an idea.
I'm bone told.
Yeah. Okay. How about 6D5?
Oh, a frequent flyer.
So this is a case against Victor Fontes for non-registered practice of land surveying with Nogales Engineering Company. He performed a survey in Vail, Arizona. I think didn't complete it. Didn't, said he involved Montaño, who's in one of, well, who just surrendered his license on a previous consent we approved. So Montaño said he didn't have anything to do with it. And hasn't worked much with Fontes, but Fontes said he was doing everything under Montaño's direction. And then staff found that the respondent violated rules or statutes 32.121, 32.145.1, and recommendations as assurance of discontinuance, penalty of $1,000, and investigation in the amount of $534. Any discussion? I will say I was a little appalled that he says, I've only had 4 violations through my career.
Only?
That have come up against to the board.
My thought is that we have a signed consent agreement, so I'm willing to go along with it, but I think the penalty is too low.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the fact that he worked without a surveyor knowing about it, he just did the work on his own.
Yeah. And he's a well, I guess he's kind of a frequent flyer. We've seen him, well, at least 4 other times.
Yeah.
Has he paid
yeah,
the fines?
I mean,
is he paid up in the other fines?
Has he what?
Paid the other fines or other?
He said that one had been dismissed and 2, yeah. I don't remember, do you guys know what the other violations
were? My cases. One of them, they just did a cost investigation and he did. The second one was a small fine, and he had to pay all that. But there were assurance of discontinuance tied to those as well, so.
So that's a question I have. If we've already asked him to discontinue his practice twice and he's kept doing it, why don't we go in an injunction of the previous ones?
Well, I had talked to Scott about, he does have orders with the order of discontinuance. Bringing it back is violation of board orders. So perhaps the board can move forward with a possible injunction of finding that he's been violating the board orders.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, because again, you said we've done 2 consents where he's assured discontinuance of land surveying practice. And this is the same violation.
Gosh.
Yeah. We do have the firm he is operating under, which Montaño was the principal for, got that voluntary surrender through that Montaño case as well, so.
So we'll find another one.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be 4.
Or he'll just go rogue.
Yeah, well, that's his MO.
That's pretty much what he's doing. Rogue, yeah.
Check it out.
So we're, sounds like we're leaning towards an injunction? If we do go that way, how do we instruct the AG's office, Mr. Donald, or what's the procedure for that?
Well,
do we need to agendize it for a future month, or can we act on it today? And I guess maybe, because what's agendized today is this case, not the other two.
Yeah, for the other two, I would agendize them for next month. And I'm already moving forward with some even earlier stuff. So I would agendize it for next month.
Okay. Can we or should we still act on this case that's before us today? Can we accept this consent and still file an injunction for violation of the previous two?
Absolutely. The board can do that. If he's violated earlier orders, the board can offer injunction. At the same time, if he enters into a consent agreement, that would seem to be the best way to get him to comply with the terms the board would like regarding this issue, including payment of fines.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the signed consent agreement in case P17075.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. And then can we also ask then staff to agendize for potential injunction on previous violations? I also had one other question on this matter. Maybe it's not this matter. It's in the Montaño matter. He had a bunch of names on his little ledger of who's been paying him. Do we have any cases against any of the other registrants listed in there, or no? Or should we? Because, I mean, he just said, you know, this surveyor, or this person gave me $50, this person gave me $100. Yeah.
We don't have any cases at this time.
Okay. Can we direct you just to take a quick look and see if you identify any person that we know who that is, if there should be a case. Thank you, Jeff. Okay. 6E2. Home Inspector Robert Walsh, 62775. This was a case for home inspection in Tucson. The EAC recommended a letter of concern. Adriana, is there anything else you want us to know?
No, we just wanted board guidance based on that we know that the EAC did recommend a letter of concern that there's 14 deficiencies. So we wanted to go for board guidance.
This goes back to the issue I mentioned earlier that if these deficiencies weren't mentioned in the original complaint, they tend to get treated as a lesser weight than those that were identified in the complaint. So that's why these are coming to you until we address this question with the AC committees.
So, you know, my only question on that, Patty, is can we really, you know, it's hard for me to gauge the severity of some of these things. It seems like maybe I mean, we either act as they recommend or we send it back to the EAC and say, well, just want to make sure that your recommendation is still appropriate based on the fact that, you know, reported and unreported deficiencies were, you know.
Actually, we could do that because we're going to ask Scott to talk to the EACs and do a training.
Yeah, and probably would make sense that we would talk to the training.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So do we want to table this case or send it back to the AC?
The severity level isn't very high.
Was or wasn't?
Was not.
Was not. But I think that's Patty's concern is that they're assigning a very low severity level to stuff that was not part of the complaint, regardless of whether it actually is severe or not.
Did
and I don't know.
Yeah, if you look at the levels of severity, right now they're looking at, if it wasn't included in the complaint, and Doug can correct me if I'm wrong, but if it wasn't included in the complaint, they automatically give it a lower severity level, whereas if it had been included in the complaint, it may have had a higher severity.
For the same thing, yeah. If it was a roof issue, it could either score an 8 or a 2.
Yeah.
That makes sense, yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Do we need to take action to send it back to the AC?
No, just bend it.
Okay. We'll do that. 6E4. I think this is a similar situation. Another home inspector, Gonzalo Marquez. It's the last one we have in front of us today. What would you like to do? Look at or send it back?
I think for consistency we should send it back, and I'll make that motion if needed.
Okay. I don't think we need a motion from what I understood, but we'll send it back then. Do we want to try... So Winter, do we want to try Ms. Asari again?
Automatic voice message system. 6 2 3 2 9 3 6 4 0 4 is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
This is Kurt Winter again at the board meeting trying to get a hold of you. I'm sorry we didn't catch you, but we're going to probably proceed with the matter at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt. Job. Okay, no, I think we, at this point we should be okay proceeding. So, matter is 6C5, Ana Asari, Arizona Special Inspections, and this is in reference to the Providence Homes in the Barcelona subdivision, where she used stamps of others for at least 3 projects. Her main claim was that part-time employees, high school students that she hires, were responsible for it.
It's the kid's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the recommended resolution by staff was discontinuance, $20,000 penalty, and $404 for cost of investigation. Mr. Hunt, anything else you want to say about it?
No, I mean... 40 different projects over a 2-year time frame that they forged the signature and seal and changed the expiration date on every single one.
Yeah, so that shows intent when they're changing the expiration date.
So was there no inspection at all by anybody?
No, they did the inspection. Yeah.
Were they qualified to do the inspection?
Well, according to Ms. Essery, they had trained to do an investigative inspector. But that would, the material would come back, and her story changed on that, how that would be processed through her office, and then it was home office, and then it was someplace else. That she never even knew Mr. Knighton, who was the alleger in the case, the registrant who they used his seal repeatedly.
What it came down to is they did the inspection, but it was supposed to be either overseen in the field or at least reviewed by a registrant to sign off on it. And that registrant didn't work with them, or hasn't worked with them for at least 2 years? 3?
Yeah, at the end of January 2015 is when he stopped employment. And
3 years ago.
So 40 projects from then until as recent as March, May of 2017.
What was her demeanor during the investigation? Did she cooperate?
Denying, and she wouldn't get back to me. It took multiple tries to even get in touch with her. 6 or 7 phone numbers, email addresses.
Do you know, is the firm still open, or is she registering the firm, or?
She claims she didn't know it needed to be registered. She says they stopped business at this point. She took over in 2015. She's been with the company ever since it started. Up until 2015, they had been registered.
Okay. So she's claiming that they're closing down the office.
Yeah, she said they haven't done any work since she got a call from Mr. Knighton. Back in June of last year.
Okay. So any thoughts on the consent agreement? I think, I mean, it looks very similar to the other one we approved. The other one we did add notification to the City of Phoenix.
Probably do the same.
So, do we have a motion?
I would motion that we do the same wording as the previous, because no doubt they'll see these have the same whatever that was.
Same wording on?
Well, the previous case.
The Providence case.
We added the words about the City of Phoenix. Yeah. Let's have that.
And Scott also noted something.
Mr. Bowman?
Yeah, there's something in reading this, I just noticed on the signature page, which is page 2400 of the packet, where Anna Acera will be signing, legally it should be Anna Acera on behalf of herself and on behalf of Arizona Special Inspections Group LLC respondents. We need to get herself in there additionally, that language, in order to have her liable.
Personally. Corporately.
Okay.
Great catch.
So we need a motion.
You mean you touched it last?
Yeah. Well, how do we call up the previous
notification to the City of Phoenix for the board's findings?
They can wordsmith it.
Wordsmith it. Okay, so I will move. I'll move assurance of discontinuance, civil penalty of $20,000, payments. The payments would be over 24 months.
I think this one, that's appropriate.
Yeah. cost of investigation of $404. And that the City of Phoenix would be notified.
Yeah.
And what else?
Not signed.
And the corrected language, signature. What's that? Okay. We're going to modify the signature.
Modify the signature block in the order as noted. And then it's, what's that again?
Not signed in 30 days.
Not signed in 30 days.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, moving on to 6G. Yes, sir.
Well, something like this, Jeff, where we have such a large civil penalty and the cost of an investigation is only $404, does that mean it didn't take that much time? get to the bottom of this?
I mean, I don't know what CD, I don't know what our...
We just lost a lot of cases, really.
you don't determine wage.
Well, it's your time. It's calculated.
That's an hourly rate, but, I mean, some things are just pretty more obvious
pretty
than
simple.
Others.
You get to put a request in for documentation, and lo and behold, it's all right there. You just have to sit through it. So.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. All right, 6G1.
Can we consent G1 and G2? The EAC membership?
Somebody has a question?
I'm okay with that. If everybody's okay with consenting G1 and G2, yes. We have a motion to do that. Second. All in favor of consenting?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. So 61 and 62 for EAC appointments.
I move we approve both 6G1 and 6G2 for their appointments accordingly.
Can we just put them? We just did that.
Well, we just consented them to go together. So,
oh, sorry.
He's moving that we accept them for EAC members.
Way ahead of us.
Yeah.
Definitely.
We do need a second, though.
Definitely.
I'll second.
Yeah.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed?
Man, look at
hey, okay. Motion
shoe
passes.
Marks from walking all over. Those are good shoes, though.
I got good shoes.
Okay, 6H1. Kurt Rederer, KPR Consulting. This is a non-registrar who prepared plans for Rosati's Pizza. And I think this case is Mr. Kramer's?
Yes.
So, yeah. And so I understand this guy prepared similar plans and had similar issues in Illinois and Texas?
Correct.
Okay. And anything else?
Has made no contact with the board, talked to the investigators in Illinois and Texas, and they had a similar situation where he's not contacted them either. We did send out a certified mail, and it was signed for both times with the notice of the violation and the notice of the hearing today. To me it's an obvious fraud, forgery of the seal. I don't see any reason to do it to the EAC. We'll just move on to formal and criminal prosecution.
Okay. And we have no more information on his whereabouts? I mean, he did sign, but he hasn't answered calls for anything.
Correct.
I move to send the case to formal hearing and to the Attorney General's Office for criminal prosecution.
Second. Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. 6H2. Arlos Padilla. P18050. Respond from Survey Arizona. This is about doing a survey in Three Points without registration. He was revoked in June of last year. Anything we need to do? Or any questions for Mr. Tacky, either way.
Well, we could call him right now on his phone, and he'll pick up Survey Arizona, so he's still active. Yeah, he's not shy about it either, so.
Okay.
I move we forward this case directly to formal hearing and direct the Attorney General's Office to petition the Superior Court for an injunction to prohibit respondent and respondent firm from practicing a board-regulated profession without registration.
Wow. Second. Nice.
Well said.
Practiced.
Can I get a second? Just stay up.
Second.
I was second.
Practicing your lines. All right. Any more discussion on this item? If not, we'll vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Can't even get his own attorney to old attorney to take on his case.
I know. So
that's
item
in addition to all the other ones, right?
Yeah. 8A1 and 2. This is just for information, right? We don't take action on it?
We have to do 8A1 if we have
cancellations. Oh, the cancellations, yeah. I need you to do that, Ed.
You need me to do that? All
please.
Right. I will do that. Mr. Chair, I'm going to make sure my name's not on the list. Mr. Chair, I move that we cancel the registrations and certifications that have been expired for one full renewal period as listed under 8A1.
Second.
There's a motion to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Moving on to item 9. 9A. recommendation to hire a home inspector through a state-recognized temporary employee company to assist licensing would require report reviews only when application backlogs occur.
Would you like me to explain?
Yes, please.
The home inspector committee discussed the situation that we have where frequently home inspector evaluations can be backlogged, you know, for months at a time because we didn't have enough evaluators. So during that crisis, we looked at the possibility of just using like a temp service to have a home inspector available to review evaluations. We currently have a good volunteer group, and the apps are moving through quickly. So what was discussed is if going ahead, having a home inspector, one, through a temp service, pay $25 an hour, but use only when no volunteers are available and we're starting to develop a backlog. We don't want people to go, well, wait, I want to get paid to do it instead of volunteering. Also, we would need to keep the cost very low so that we don't bump up against any procurement issues. So I have to know if the board's comfortable with moving forward on that. There are ups and there are downs to doing it.
Yeah, my only concern is we might actually lose our volunteers.
Yeah, that's my concern.
Even though it's not much money, I mean, why would people volunteer if they can just get paid to do it?
Yeah. So that's, we would, write up a procedure, a policy that, very specific. This is only if we develop a backlog. It will not take the place of volunteer services.
Yeah, and then what happens when that happens with engineers or with architects or anybody else? I almost think, I know we have licensing time frames we have to meet, but I'm not excited about it. And I don't think we should micromanage you either, but...
Well, I mean, I have to admit, I see the need for it, particularly when our volunteers aren't there and the licensing staff's getting called several times a week from people who are yelling at them. So I see the point for it, but I also see the anxiety about why would I volunteer if I can get paid.
I'm in the same boat, but at the current time, so this is some good news for you guys, there are no home inspector applications probably for the first time, like waiting to go to evaluators. They're all out, they're all with evaluators. We got one more right now on this board meeting. We have 16 or 17 active ones right now. And I am concerned that if they find out that one of their friends is actually getting $25 an hour to do it, that they're not going to want to do it for free. But if we do get backlogged again, that could be an issue. So currently we have no need for this person, but we know.
Is there anybody else that you could pay that's not a home inspector, structural engineer or architect or somebody that would qualify, that would remove that element of home inspectors get paid to do this?
And now this is completely separate from the bill that we're going to look at later. So there's a bill that's recommending this.
Well, and this does go to the compact bill and one way of keeping that compact bill from becoming a reality in the discussion that we had with Senator Kavanaugh. Essentially, if we can say you don't need a temporary license because we're moving things through quickly, that threat goes away. If we end up with backlogs and people are waiting several months, and it's only home inspectors who have had that kind of backlog, it creates an opening for that type of law to go through.
So is this something we have to decide today, or can we say, let's not do it, and if the need arises because we have a backlog, then we evaluate it at that point?
I think it's fine to put it off, and maybe what we can do is write up something a little more structured and consider other options rather than... I'm anxious about how do we choose a home inspector to do it without getting into some kind of corner there. The committee had a person they recommended, but it's an ex-committee member.
Yeah, maybe we have a home inspector who's not registered in Arizona?
Yeah, let's pend it, and then we'll give you something more to work with on it. I'm probably not the salesperson because I'm so on the fence on it. maybe we could have one of the home inspector committee members come and talk about it.
I also have a couple evaluators right now. They're getting stuff back. Some guy is, he's getting back within a day or two. Another one has gotten like three back within a week. And so I wouldn't want them to be demotivated at all. And they're doing such a good job for us. So yeah. I'm kind of on the fence as well.
Yeah. And maybe we ought to find a way to thank those guys and incentivize them for all the help they're providing. I don't know if it's free lunches or free trainings or, you know, pat on the back emails or certificates. I mean,
I've given them phone calls saying thanks, but I wish there was some other.
I mean, we're giving certificates to the engineers that review a lot of the applications, thanking them and bringing them to the board. I think some appreciation would be good.
Jason Madison is actually on the home inspector committee, so I also think it's better dependent for when he's here, so yeah. He can talk about what he likes or doesn't like about it.
Sounds good. Next item, 9B, as to whether to rescind substantive policy 17, discussing whether acting as an expert witness is engineering practice under Arizona statutes.
That came out of our L&R committee meeting last week. Last Tuesday. The minutes are in the packet. But actually, Mr. Donald can probably say it far more eloquently than I can, because it was based on legal advice for how we got to where we are bringing this back to the board.
And I'll be happy to go into executive session.
That's right, we'd have to do that.
Okay. Let's do that. Let's go into executive session for legal advice, please.
Motion, second.
Motion, second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. He's like a director.
Yeah, just points and we do, please, Kurt.
Okay.
I got to use the floor, right?
Gavlin's back in.
Okay, we're back in session, continuing discussion of item 9B. We've taken legal advice, so let's open up for discussion on whether we want to keep or rescind the policy statement 17.
I move that we rescind policy statement 17.
Second.
Okay. And I would agree with that. I would. The only comment I would make is that we should probably let ADOT know, since they came in and request that we consider that policy. Just let them know that we've rescinded the policy. If we do a newsletter, it's been a while, hasn't we?
We're in the process.
Okay.
So.
That would be something also that we want to put in there as well.
Would that be beneficial to ADOT? Would they mind? Would they care?
They probably wouldn't like it, but I think we got to do what's best for the state from our view.
We have to follow our legal guidance.
So we're not saying that the registrar is not an expert. We're just saying you don't have to be registered.
You don't have to be registered. Well, we're just saying we don't have a policy on it.
Oh, okay.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
One second.
Let's move on to item.
There wasn't a vote on that.
Oh, we haven't voted. Okay. All in favor of the motion to rescind policy 17?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Up to 9C.
Okay.
Patty?
I'm not going to torture you with all of these, but the agenda should let someone know more specifically what you're going to talk about. So if you want to talk about any of these, they've been probably noticed. There are two that have some positive news and then three that the board may have concern with. I'll start with the positive news, the state compact temporary professional license, Senate Bill 1184. The AIA was kind enough to invite us to join them in a meeting with Senator Kavanaugh, the sponsor. And Senator Kavanaugh is open to realizing maybe the bill he dropped is not written in the best way possible. So one thing we presented was, the bill was going to give people quite a long time to come in and practice with the temporary license. And we explained it really doesn't take that long to get a license. So if somebody can get a license, like an architect or engineer, to 2 weeks to 2 months, is there a need for this temporary license? And, other professions have come forward with these concerns. So he's realized that maybe he's going backwards. This bill applies to every profession and occupation, and he's thinking kind of put the bill forward, but right now it's non-committal. Even if it goes through, it says the board may enter into a compact. And then what he would like to do is research what professions and occupations need to be in a compact as opposed to what are already taking care of themselves. So I don't know if Tina has anything she wants to add so far. I think the concern has taken a step back.
Yeah, he basically said that he was tired of lobbyists and professions waltzing through his office. And so he figured that what he will do next year is draft legislation that occupations and professions will ask to opt into the compact rather than all of us asking to be opted out. So, and we also explained to him the difference between an occupation and a profession. So he'll be okay with that.
Right, and that's kind of where the discussion of home inspectors comes in, that as long as we can say, you know, there's not a big holdup to get licensed, you know, we don't need to go down this road. And home inspectors, as I've said, have been our big holdup. However, the next good news is the home inspector bill, the Home Inspector Association is running a bill that would change from the FBI fingerprint background check that takes so long to clearance cards as well.
1045? Is that the one you're talking about?
Okay. So that will speed that part up. They did put in their language that would allow the board to hire a temporary person to assist with investigations or evaluations, but doesn't commit the board to it. I don't know that that was needed, but it's in there. And it's going through fine. Mr. Peterson put in an amendment that says that we can only require the clearance cards for initial application and not anything else. I don't know what everything else he was thinking it would be, but you know, with that, he actually voted for it, which is highly surprising. But perhaps that was out of respect to Senator Cannon. The bills of concern that I don't know if you're going to want to talk about and perhaps take any kind of position on. One has to do with contracts, licensing requirements, waiver. Essentially, two parties can agree to waive licensure if the transaction meets certain definitions, it falls within a certain amount of money, and it's done largely electronically. But other than that, it's pretty wide open. And it seems like one of those bills that's really meant to deal with something in particular, but it's not. It's just kind of hitting everything. So it could open the door to, you know, people, it doesn't even say if this person's been revoked, they can't do this. So Mr. Padilla could use this law to practice within a certain constraint. It's like less than $6,000 a year, $500 per transaction. You know, the board can say nothing. It can be neutral, but express concern about public safety. It can oppose. I'm doubting that it will support. Any thoughts?
If they have limitations on dollar amounts, it's probably limited projects.
Yeah,
whatever
it could be. Like I said, it's got to apply, be about something in particular.
Yeah, you can take a project and break it up into 10.
I think we got to pick our battles.
Times five.
But this one seems like we should oppose, in my mind. I mean, the issue with this is not the cost. It's not what decides whether you need a professional or not. I mean, you think about it, for instance, one of the most important documents you can have for you, it's your legal description. That's rarely, I mean, okay, it could be over $500, but that's about right there. And if, you know, Mr. Padilla wanted or somebody, they could just say, okay, I'll, you know, do my research, and that's one contract. Then I'll do another one to place your pins. Then I'll do another one to write your legal.
Yeah.
And you don't need a surveyor for that? Could you do the same for a floodplain certification?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that are critical to life, property, that are not tied to the cost. But I think this is a bad bill.
Some way around it, yeah.
Just, if you're comfortable, we'll sign in as opposed due to public safety concerns. I mean, it's one of those, if they have a narrow meaning and change the wording of the bill, it could solve the concern. It just, the way it's worded right now, it's very wide open. Okay. The other concern, Senate Bill 1436, Prohibition Criminal History Occupational Regulation tries to tie a board's hands on denying a license to somebody with a criminal history, including somebody with a recent felony. It used to be, up until this bill, I think it's Dr. Tommy, you know, an application, when you're applying for a license, it's not a right. You know, it's a privilege. Well, this kind of changes it to a right. And to make it really strange is this person could apply for you to look at their criminal history long before they passed the exam or gotten their experience. And you would have to decide whether or not that criminal conviction would cause denial of a license. And then they could appeal that denial, even though you don't even know if they qualified for a license. Which so it creates a liability that doesn't exist now. If the person didn't qualify for a license, we wouldn't even get to this point. It's a very odd bill.
Any thoughts on it? Patty, my personal take on it is I don't like it, but I would probably suggest that the biggest change in my mind is the, to deny somebody, you need to meet two criteria. You need to meet both. I mean, one is that the state has an important interest in protecting public safety that is superior to the person's right, and that has its own burden of proof, and it's pretty hard to meet, but whatever. But then the other one is it's an and. So even if something is detrimental to the state, you also have that person have to have a felony or misdemeanor involving violence or sexual offense. So if this guy has, theft violations or fraud, a bunch of cases, you still can't deny based on the second part because he doesn't have a sexual or violent conviction. So I don't know. I would say that we have concerns with the language, that specific part, that it has to be a violence or sexual offense.
Someone has a recent conviction for burglary and wants to apply to be an alarm agent.
Exactly. Yeah, or 5, or 10, yeah. Or 50. You can have however many you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Opposed or neutral, but with concerns.
With concerns.
I'd say neutral with concerns, but neutral I could see opposed, concerns. Whatever you guys think.
It's neutral with concerns. I mean, there's just issues.
I think it obviously creates a little bit more work for the board, but it's not the end of the world.
Well, I think this board's always been pretty objective in evaluating those folks that do have criminal records and really drilling pretty deep to make sure that if we were going to deny it, that it had a direct application to their field of practice.
Yeah, we just haven't had in the last couple of years, in a sense, they did something bad 2 years ago. It should have been 10 years ago or 8 years ago, but
not just recently, that's
the tough one.
And it may impact the home inspector. Our law says you can't have been convicted of a felony and you have to have been released with 5 years prior to act. So it would kind of wipe out that home inspector law.
Yeah, and hopefully, if there's a chance to talk to the legislature, the other thing is they tried to be very specific on stuff like this with the alarm agents too, and then they had to backtrack because one size doesn't fit all.
Exactly. Okay, and then just, there's more FYI. GERC it's done in Odwin, and the very odd thing at Senate Bill 1273, GERC review licensing requirements. A person can appeal to GERC if they believe that licensing requirements are overly burdensome, and GERC can essentially, if they agree with that person, do away with your rule. But the really odd thing about it is it says that any professional or occupational group whose median income is less than 200% or 400% for a family of four are somehow exempted, how would you ever even figure that out? So I don't know that you need to take a position, but it's a strange one to keep an eye on. I actually got a question from Mr. Greenslade about it, like, what the heck is that? And I'm like...
Well, Goldwater Institute is all over that too, because I see you guys an article about that yesterday.
Yeah. So, and we've seen, this is the strange language that came up with the fee waiver last year. You have to waive a fee for somebody with a family of four, a certain level of poverty level, but how do you make that determination? How does that work? It's the same kind of passing a law without or knowing how it would even function. Let's see. And then public meetings, we have to post audio visual. You know, it's not something I, you know, particularly worry about, just it's kind of coming at us and may come through. And the rest, if you have questions on the rest, I'd be happy to answer them. House Bill 2223, this is the bill that would allow a judge on appeal to override a board's expert. That actually is being mirrored in Congress. The FTC issues that have come up. There's a bill in Congress that would exempt boards from the FTC, but a trade-off would be language like this, where somebody has oversight of a board's final decisions.
But what about the bill we went to see, the child detention?
It died.
It died.
That's why it's not on here. All the bills had to go through their house of origin by a certain date. These have actually all gone through their house of origin, so they're still alive.
What was that number again?
Oh, I'd have to look it up.
Do you remember the number?
No. It's like 2052 or
something.
I don't remember.
All right.
But it never got on committee.
Okay.
So unless somebody tries to resurrect it elsewhere, it's gone.
Okay, what do you think are the odds of House Bill 2490 and Senate 1436? The two that, you know, we sort of...
I think they'll change. 1436, she tried to do something similar last year, and it ended up dying along the way because it was overly broad, and this is once again overly broad. So I think it'll have the same kind of objections of you need to narrow it down. 2490, I like to say I can't believe that would possibly go through, but I thought the fee waiver would never go through in the form it went through, so it's a scary time.
Yeah. I think in particular for 2490, that one worries me. I mean, small contracts can have big consequences down the line. So if there's an opportunity for us to talk to legislatures or you need someone to come talk, I'm happy to do it, and I'm sure others would if need be.
Remember, your constituents. You have your own opinions, and you have a right to express your personal opinions, not as board members.
My representatives are all Democrats.
Director's report, I will not be Melissa, I promise.
Do you need a tiara?
I forgot my tiara. I won't torture you with the budget update. I'll let Melissa do that next month. You've had a long day. Computer system, the big five renewals have been working.
Yeah.
So our next, when we roll do our next quarterly renewal, we'll send people notices that they can renew online with the instructions. Rob has been working really, really hard on making sure all the bugs are worked out, and people have been really great at kind of being, you know, our rabbit here on the experiment, and you know, renewing online and helping us figure out where it got stuck. So that's good news. The vendor payment, there's been a new contract. I haven't seen it yet, but I've been informed that we would pay them month by month, so we have more control over what they're doing and not doing. There was a penetration test that had to do with concerns about their vulnerability. We had a meeting, what was it? Friday morning, and essentially it was made very, very clear to the vendor they will fix it, and they will fix it now, or they will no longer be a vendor in many states. So we expect to have that resolved. The rules package we're just putting together, it's called the Economic Impact Statement. It's the most complex. Before a rule goes to GERC to become law, we have to explain what kind of economic impact it will have on registrants, the public, on us, on other state agencies. It's pretty much drafted. Kurt and I just need to clean it up and just move it forward. We received no comments requesting any changes to the proposed rulemaking, so it's good to go. And staff workloads, we've essentially put too much on Rob, but he seems to be holding up quite well, except if you look at him right now.
A little frazzled, but yeah.
But we did come to the conclusion that we didn't really need to hire someone in Alicia's position as it was and in Travis's position as it was. A lot of the IT can be taken care of either through contracts or internal. And Michelle Johnson, who has been with the board in the past in the operations department, not in here now, has come back to join us, and she's extremely knowledgeable on operations and accounting and procurement. And she's handling all that. So it's actually dropping our staff down to 20 instead of 21, operating more efficiently, more effectively. And we will continue down that road.
Do you lose that position down the road?
We could. There's always a risk that they could say, you don't need this anymore. But that we've had four open positions for a while, and they haven't done that. So I'm not overly concerned. And director's meetings. Rob, do you want to say anything about your AIA meeting?
Nothing too much to report. I just walked down the street over there, AIA, and just talked to about 30 or so people there. I got to talk to some, I guess they weren't students, but prospective architects that had questions about our process, but nothing too crazy.
No complaints about application or processing?
No, we had somebody said, like, I was giving them talk, and they're like, I'm like, oh, you know, usually it takes, like, up to 2 months, and someone's like, oh, it's taking me 5 months, and I was like, like, and then I came back and I looked into it, and she hadn't even applied yet, so...
It's taking her 5 months to get the application together.
She hasn't applied. She just talked to NCARB and then called one of us and then called NCARB again and kind of just stalled. So it's been 5 months since she first called NCARB. But yeah. So that was good. It only take 5 months, but that's it.
National Council, Rob and I are going to lovely Wichita, Kansas in 2 weeks. We're breaking out our parkas. Getting ready to see what's happening. It should be interesting because the National Council is all very worried about the compact push that's going on around the country, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of conversations are going on.
What's the latest in the board positions to be refilled?
We have not heard anything now. We talked to the governor's new staff person for board appointments, and what she told us is she's got like 200 openings to fill, and many of them have to go through the legislature and be approved. So those were her priorities. So she pretty much looked at us and said, you're way at the back of the line. So we'll periodically contact her again, but I don't expect to go anyplace soon.
Poor Jason.
Life sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we going to offer him like a medical insurance package?
Sure,
insurance.
Yeah.
Well,
our
pension.
July.
Yeah.
Or last year.
Yeah. June.
Last July. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're waiting too. We're waiting on yours. We did emphasize to Emily, it's like, okay, we've got all these positions to fill. You know, if you have people who are re-upping that you know are competent and qualified, just reappoint them and save yourself the agony. Unfortunately, they are interviewing everybody before they appoint, so at some point you'll probably have a call for an interview. Another reason it's taking so long.
We're not eligible for
the
appointment. Yeah, we're turned out.
Yep.
It's getting out.
Yeah.
So they could just leave us.
But you may never be leaving.
That's right.
Yeah. Great.
Purgatory.
I just call it the Hotel California. You can check out any time.
You can really
nearly.
So I'm going to NCES, the Finance Committee, next week, Monday. Same things around the board as usual, which is raising exam costs. And they made $5 million last year.
We did a nominations.
That's amazing.
We had a nominations committee, not even a meeting, an email. So. There you go. We picked whoever the elected officials are going to be.
Nice.
It was simple.
Good job.
It's the easiest committee I've ever been on, so I might stick on that one.
Sounds like fun. Cool.
I have enough statistics to review for you. You will have those next time.
And board chairs review. I have nothing I can say. Or once said.
They haven't already said.
Yes, but I haven't said. Standing committees.
L&R, we kind of got a report. We took action on it. That was the main part of it. When the minutes come out, then we can kind of clarify what some of the other, and have been approved, we can clarify the other questions that came up during that meeting.
Well, one note is it seems like Peter Leitz was there, but he's not listed on the roll call on the minutes.
Yeah, he's there.
Yeah, he was there.
He's listed in some of the discussion. He should contribute.
We'll make sure we'll fix that when we...
That has been reviewed, but you haven't given anything.
Okay.
I just wanted to include it, so there's something.
Thanks, Kurt.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll make that, we'll check that in the next meeting. We don't have a meeting scheduled.
Health inspector, Jay Matson is here, but so maybe next month he'll want that report.
Okay. Board member reports and outside activities. ASPOG?
No news.
Barb? Mr. Gilmore?
Nothing to report.
NCARB?
No, next month.
Thankfully, Mr. Armstrong canceled for this month. Otherwise, we'd be here for another hour.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. Oh boy, he could have seen some interesting cases, though.
I'm working too much real life.
That'd have been good for him.
NCS, we already covered. Future board meetings, March 27th. Suggested topics, anything?
I have 65 up there.
Oh, 65. What was that one?
Go back up to the back.
And then you were going to look at the home inspector committee recommendation.
Oh, Victor Fontes, that's... Yeah.
There was also a few...
Fontes for injunction for previous violations of discontinuance.
There's a few recommendations for articles to help clarify.
I'm going to call it.
That's probably all right.
It's not dinner time. Are you sure you don't want to keep going on?
All right. Anything else? Even if you have something, it's not on the agenda, so...
Yeah.
All right. Can we just...
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Bye-bye.